Hello and welcome to the Soul Files podcast. I am Levi Wolf.
And I am Abby Murphy, and together we host this podcast. We decided to make this podcast because we are passionate about the people who work at SoftwareOne.
Between Abby and I, we have 17 years of SoftwareOne experience across a number of different roles and locations, and we love getting the chance to dive deeper into the culture of the company.
This podcast is a behind-the-scenes look at some of our friends at SoftwareOne. We call them SWOMIs. The things they do at work, and even some of their hobbies and activities outside of work.
So whether you're a current employee, a prospective new SWOMI, a SoftwareOne alumni, a customer, a partner, or just a friend of the show,
we hope you enjoy this deep dive into the people of SoftwareOne and the things that make them great.
Enjoy the show.
Okay, welcome to another episode of the SWO Files. Today's very special guest is the one and only Jared Cheney. Hey, Jared, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited. Before we really kick things off, do you want to just do a quick introduction with your kind of title or current role and how long you've been at SoftwareOne?
Sure. So Jared Cheney, I'm the VP of Services, and I've been at SoftwareOne almost 6 years. So it'll be 6 years in November. So crazy.
Wow. Yeah, that's getting up there. I was going to say to kick it off, you know, I think this is probably long overdue because we had probably in February, March, when we had seen you in Cabo, you were giving me a hard time for not having you scheduled earlier. So, you know, that's 6 years that's you've been at the company, we finally got you on. So here we are.
About time, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I wasn't going to say about time, but, you know, yeah, about time.
About time. Yeah.
Well, why don't you, like, tell us a little bit about your current role at SoftwareOne? Like, what does VP of Services mean?
Sure. So I'm responsible for our entire services portfolio for the customer delivery side and making sure that we can, you know, scope and deliver against, you know, the entire portfolio of what we do. So that includes our commercial services, you know, from a procurement and asset management side, that includes all of our technology side, including, you know, cloud and application, digital workplace, essentially the SAP, app services, everything that we do. And really, you know, at the end of the day, it's helping make sure that our customers get value from everything that they're doing in technology.
So you say like North America is kind of the scope of your role. And a lot of times when we say that, you know, we're really just meaning the US and maybe Canada. But I think when it comes to what you might have visibility into and work with, it means a lot more than that, right? Because there's a lot of other offices and global teams. So yep. I'm just curious, like maybe some of the countries you have to interact with normally or like how that kind of structure works up.
No, that's a great question. So we actually have two significant delivery centers that we've built up over the years, both in San Jose, Costa Rica, as well as Guadalajara, Mexico. And then now with our recent acquisition, we're building out another XDC, which is a remote delivery center in Calgary with our Beneva team. So yeah, it's quite a bit of that. That's like in the day to day. But then again, from a delivery capability, we've got pods of folks all over. So we have some of our delivery team in Colombia. We have some of our delivery team in Poland, some delivery that happens out of Germany. And then, you know, we interact with the team in LATAM as well as EMEA and DACH and APAC pretty regularly. So it's pretty busy. Yeah. We talk a lot about, you know, our customers are based in the US and Canada and a little bit of like West Indies, some other places, but you know, our delivery team could be coming from lots and lots of places.
Very cool. And you speak Spanish, right, Jared?
I do. Yeah. I lived in Central America for a while.
Should we do the next question in Spanish?
That will be the second podcast.
Perfect.
No, it's cool to hear you talk about those countries. Cause I mean, you know, from the time I've been at SoftwareOne, that the global piece is always, you know, a real strength of ours and really interesting. Yep. And you know, we talk about our maybe sales capabilities for a customer who's located globally. And it's cool to see the back end of it that like you just probably mentioned potentially 20 different countries that might touch a project depending on the service line.
Exactly. And you know, I think there's some really unique, great things that can be done because of that. There's the capability we have to really basically continue to work on something throughout an entire 24-hour period. So we talk about, you know, this follow the sun methodology. Essentially, we can have where there's critical work that has to be done that could be transferring or transitioning between individuals around the entire globe. So that you get an entire 24 hours of work done in a single day on, you know, a potential piece of work, which is amazing. And on top of that, you get a lot of perspective, you get a lot of additional, you know, cultural additions to the team, which make it really, really great for the customer.
And now, Jared, when you first started at Software One, I mean, we've grown considerably, both organically and through acquisition globally. Yes. So what's the biggest change, would you say, like, in kind of what, where we are at 6 years ago to where we are today when it comes to our technology services? Loaded question, I'm sure, but.
Yeah, no, it's a super loaded question. But it's actually funny because we just had our mid-year, you guys were there, and we had the team together, and I was sitting there looking, realizing that the very first team meeting that I had 17 employees and 12 people from other parts of the business joined me. I think actually total, including other leaders, we had 30 people come to my first services get together, right? And this one we had nearly 300 services people at, right? So from a scaling perspective, it starts to really, you recognize how much we've grown. But you know, when you think about what we were doing then, we were really just starting to work really hard on the advisory space, you know, helping customers recognize where they needed to go. There was a lot of things we couldn't actually help them accomplish or complete, but we got to help shape some of that strategy. And now what I love about our portfolio is that really we can go end to end with a customer and help them from the strategy side, but also really the implementation and then the managed service side. So, you know, we've really, really matured and grown our offerings. And as you guys mentioned, some of it organically, actually a lot of it organically, but also several key acquisitions, which have given us some of that scale.
It really gives us the, like, the software one and done, like one partner, and we can kind of help you with all aspects of it, which I think is really cool. And that, I know the technology services aspect of it plays a huge deal in us of being able to say that now.
For sure. But, you know, and again, it's the ability to start at that commercial front end, right? You know, helping customers recognize how they're procuring, what they're buying, baseline that, and then leverage that to do what they need to do. And we can help them from the very beginning all the way through whatever they need to implement, roll out, change, you know, migrate and modernize, and then into managing and helping them run it efficiently and effectively. So it is. To your point, it's really great to be able to go end to end with them.
So I'm curious, you know, we talked about it's changed in 6 years. Maybe how did you find Software One 6 years ago, and what attracted you to come to, at the time, a much smaller team?
So I had been in, I've been in the technology industry for a long time, and I've been in services for a long time. I had come across Software One really, you guys will chuckle, as, you know, a technology partner to procure software. So that, you know, it had been part of, you know, my mix when I was at Xerox and some of the other places. So I was familiar with the company, but not really with any of the intricacies of the services side of the business. To be fair, I've had this conversation with Neil. We're really not 100% sure who or where we got introduced, but at some point we knew some of the same people, and they sent a recruiter my way to just have a chat and see if I'd be interested. And to be honest, guys, I wasn't sure. I was like, why would Software One want me? I'm a services and technology guy. Like, I don't know anything about selling software, right? Yeah. And so I had some of those early conversations, and then had some conversations with Sean Nicholson and Oliver and Neil Lomax. And Neil, when I met in person, I was like, we knew so many of the same people. It was really funny. Long process, but finally, you know, I realized there was an amazing opportunity. There was so much knowledge about how you could help customers that I felt like I just had to jump on the bandwagon. And yes, it was small, and I was a little shocked when I got here how small my team was and what my scope was. But also, you know, the appetite for growth and the appetite to really build what we're building now was there then. And that was exciting for me. And that's really what attracted me.
And where were you before this?
So I was at a company called Yeah, I was at a company called Atmosera, and we had taken a couple of companies and built a cloud practice around Azure. So I had done a 3-year stint there. It was a PE backed company, but I was ready for another transition to do something else and something, you know, that we could grow really big, which was fun.
Yeah, and that's what you're doing here.
Yeah, and it has been. Yeah.
Something I'm kind of curious about. So like you mentioned, and especially 6 years ago, it's changed, but like the licensing side of SoftwareOne, which we still very much have, and then the service side. And I think as sellers, like Abby and I, sometimes maybe we look at it differently. And I was just curious, like from a service person who does a lot of delivery things, like how do you see the difference between licensing and services? Or do you feel like we've gotten to a point where we're starting to include them in the same conversation and there's not a big difference?
You know, it's interesting. I think when I started, we saw them as like two completely disparate things, right? And we've even, you know, we've organized the business to make sure that we can support them effectively, right? But what's really interesting is that when you're helping a customer with the software that they want to buy and the technology decisions that they're making, you guys have heard us talk about our 7 R's, right? Relicense being one of them. There's not a lot of people out there. There's not a lot of competition out there that actually has the insights from what technology customers are trying to procure to help them make really strong decisions about how they need to roll that out and run it. And so what's really cool is that the insights, the data that we can glean from, you know, the quote unquote, that software transactional side of our business, the marketplace side, actually is informing more and more of what we help our customers with from a services side. And it's kind of remarkable. I think we knew that the data was great, but when you think about the actual strategy of what a customer wants to accomplish, you can't do one without understanding the other. And so I think that's just one of the unique advantages that we can bring to a customer. And like we've said before, and I don't want to overuse, but truly going end to end with them. It's not just what have you done, but let's help you do it better from a technology procurement perspective, manage those assets, and then leverage them into the technology landscape that you want to build. Right. So I think it's amazing.
Yeah. I love that it's not either or, because that's, I think, you know, mentally maybe the mistake as a seller that I could make or that we make is like it's one or the other. And I like listening to you, and I would encourage anyone to go back and re-listen to that. It's like it's not one or the other. Think of it in your mind as the same thing, and then like, you know, internally we'll sort out where it goes. But I like that
take
approach.
A holistic approach, start to finish. Very cool. So one thing we like to ask our guests is about the SoftwareOne culture. So people talk about it a lot. What do you think is unique about it, or why do you think people are always so keen to speak to it?
Well, I think, you know, we all are drawn to, you know, distinct probably environments, right? But I think one of the things that everybody looks for or looks at in their workplace or where they want to spend a lot of time is the culture that's around you. And to your guys' point, we talk about culture here, but I think one of the things that's unique about SoftwareOne is that we're quite intentional about our culture. You know, culture can be what sort of happens in a business. When you get really great people together, you can start to build a culture, but you don't get to keep it without curating it and cultivating it. And I think that's one of the things that SoftwareOne has done really well. And that struck me from the very beginning, even in the early conversations I was having in a recruitment process, is that people were genuine about what they were saying about the culture, and they were consistent. I heard much of the same things over and over again from different individuals around how people behaved. And, you know, we have our core values, and those are kind of the anchor tenets that we build culture around. But culture is how we behave and how we leverage them and how we use them on a day-to-day basis and how we treat each other and how we come together for our customers. And, you know, the level of attention that it gets at SoftwareOne, I think, is how we're able to continue to maintain it. And, you know, we've been through over the last 6 years some really great times and some really hard times, right? You know, going through COVID, I think we saw a massive attention put on our culture and how we maintained it without being able to get together, which had always been a big part of our culture, right? And so there's just so many distinct qualities that SoftwareOne brings to the table. But really, at the end of the day, I think we're very genuine, but we're very intentional about how we want work to be and how we want our environment to be for our employees and for our customers. And, you know, it's honestly, I can say I've been in a lot of different companies over my career, and I've been in some really great teams, but I've never been anywhere that was as intentional, as careful, as focused on making sure that we maintain an amazing culture as SoftwareOne is.
When we talk about culture, and you brought up core values, and I always think about Patrick, our founder, and I'm trying to think, you know, 6 years, so 2017, was that kind of, did you have some overlap with Patrick? Like, was he involved in that first year or so?
Yep, I did.
And I, from stories I've heard, he was like pretty hands-on. Was he even involved in like the interview process or the recruiting process, or like, how did you get to know him?
Yeah. So interestingly, my interview process was very long. As I mentioned, it was over multiple months. And, you know, I had conversations, I think, with 11 different people during that process. But he actually decided not to hold up my process longer by making them schedule with him. But my second email in my inbox when I got my laptop was from Patrick, right? The first one was from like from somebody in BIT saying like, here's all of your system links, right? And the second email in there was from Patrick. And he said, hey, you know, I usually meet all of the leaders before they come on. We didn't get to meet. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously, guys. But he said, I've heard great things. I expect great things from you. I'm sure we'll connect. Welcome aboard. Right. And to be blunt, you know, for the second email in your inbox to be from the CEO and to be genuine and personalized was quite impactful to me. So my first few interactions with him, had a couple of remote interactions. Great story I like to tell is he sent an email out. We had a meeting coming up. It was a Friday. I get this email from Patrick and he said, hey, Jared, I'm about to send an email out for Monday morning. I know that's your Memorial Day in the United States. And I know that you're on the West Coast. So it's 6 a.m. your time. So I understand if you don't want to join. However, I would appreciate it if you would join this call. I've never had a CEO, first off, even acknowledged that they were booking a meeting with me on a holiday at 6 a.m. because I'm on the West Coast. But second off, that he gave me an option. Of course, I joined the call. It was a fantastic call. We were doing some planning around our AWS business, and I really needed to be a part of it. But again, he was just very personal, very genuine. And, you know, and while I'm sure he could have easily just said, Jared, I just really need you to join this call. And I would have been on that call and I wouldn't have thought anything of it. The fact that he took the time to acknowledge that it was a bit of a sacrifice on my side, but he needed it or he wanted me to do it, but gave me an option of an out, again, just spoke volumes to the way he cared about people. But that's how he was. He was very genuine, very personal. Like he knew, he remembered everything that we had talked about. Like it was, yeah, just amazing, genuine individual.
Yeah, that's a great story. Yeah, we've heard a few where that personal, like you maybe you hadn't seen him in a little bit, but like he would walk up to you and remember the last conversation you had, which is really remarkable considering how many thousands of employees he probably interacted with on an annual basis and through the course of his lifetime. So thank you for sharing that. Levi, do you think we should switch to some rapid fire questions next?
Yeah, we can. I have a kind of a goofy one to start with.
Okay.
Let's do it.
I hope this is true. I heard that you love Diet Coke, that you go through like cases like of it.
Famously
is that true?
Loves Diet Coke.
Yeah. Coke Zero. It's actually Coke Zero.
Oh, but, no.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
Famously loves Coke Zero.
Yes, Coke Zero. But yeah, no, I do. And to be fair, Diet Coke serves in a pinch. So I have been known to drink a few of those. But yeah, no, I go through way too much Coke Zero.
I mean, what are we talking like?
Advice.
So. What are we talking on average? Like 2 cans a day, like 4 cans a day?
Closer to 6 probably.
Oh, okay. No comment.
Yeah. No, and we do the like, you know, the bottles, and I'll go through like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 of the 20-ounce bottles in a day. So, you know, it's probably a few too many.
Are you like big Costco people? You just load up when you can, or where do you get it?
Yeah, everywhere. So definitely some Costco runs in there. There's like three stores near me, and I have been known to clear off a shelf or two. and so my wife gives me grief when she shows up at our local Fred Meyer. It's a Kroger brand store. It's local to the Northwest, and there's no Coke Zeros on the shelf. She's like, did you beat me here? And I'm like, it's not. Yeah.
And then do you turn all those cans in and get a little, is it like a little side hustle? How much money can you make by turning those cans?
Yeah, so in Oregon, every one of those bottles is 10 cents, and that is like my kid's college fund, I think. So,
oh, wow.
Nice. Just fund in the future for the family, which is another great topic. So you also famously have a very big family. Tell us about your family.
Yeah, so married, we have five kids. They range in ages from 12 to almost 22. Four girls, one boy. And, so they're all, and of course, none of them do any of the same activities. So they're all over the place. Like we're, you know, constantly taking them places. So my oldest is in college. She'll be a senior this year. My son is actually in Argentina right now. And then my three younger girls, two of them now in high school and one in middle school. So,
Gosh.
They keep us super busy.
Growing up so fast, I feel like when you first started, none of them were in college or high school. Probably,
no,
right?
Yeah, like my oldest was in high school, but that was it. Yeah, so it's been crazy.
Wow. You talked about you just mentioned Argentina and travel, and so I guess on the topic of kids, like do your kids have that same love of travel that I think you have, and do you think they'll end up all over places for you to visit?
Well, that's my goal. So I'm trying to instill that in all of them. I love travel. You guys know I love meeting new people and getting all over the place. But we've tried to make sure that the kids get a pretty broad exposure. A couple of years ago, we did an RV trip around the U.S. and hit like 30 states. It was lots of fun. But they've been, most of the kids have been kind of all over the place. I think. All of my kids have been to at least like 35 or 40 states now. And my older kids have all been outside of the country a couple of times. And when they graduate high school, I take them on a big graduation trip and they get to pick where we go. So my oldest daughter went all over Europe. We hit 10 countries.
Oh, wow.
My son, we actually did Europe, Asia, and Africa. So we did a pretty big trip.
That's
so
incredible.
So it's kind of a big thing. And my middle daughter, she doesn't like riding in cars very well. So we've decided we're doing some just planes and trains with her. So we're not going to do very much driving on her trip, but,
nice.
So everybody gets to plan their trip with me. So
when's her trip? Like, is she, you mentioned
2 years. Two years. Yeah. She starts her junior year, in a couple of weeks. So
is that when you typically start planning, is when they enter junior year? They're like applying to colleges if they want to go and things like
exactly.
that. So junior year is a big year for planning.
It is. Cause they've got to figure out like, when can we do that trip? Because their college start dates might be different times. Right.
Sure.
So, yeah. Very cool. What was your first job growing up?
Oof. Ever. Well, okay. So, I mean, are we counting getting paid for or because?
Both. Let's talk both.
All right. So my dad was a big believer in you should work from a very young age. So we had a farm that we took care of. We had, he had an apartment complex as well. So at like 3 years old, I was driving a tractor while we were haying the fields. No joke, for real. I've been, out there working from a pretty young age. But my first paid job was at a little corner gas station bait store and charter office. So I worked there, pumped gas, ran bait in the morning for all the fishermen all summer long. And then I worked on charter boats for them on weekends and on my off days. So I basically worked all the time during the summer when I was in high school. So
that's fun. So that kind of ties into my next favorite question. What were you like as a teenager? It sounds like you liked to work, but what else was teenage Jared like?
I love to do everything. I was into sports. I loved school. I was a good student. I was into pretty much every extracurricular activity I could find some way to get involved in. and I also, liked to work. I worked really hard all summer so that I could do all sorts of fun stuff during the school year. So I tried not to have too much job commitments during the school year. So, but I was probably, I don't know. I like to think I was pretty fun to be around, but I was probably a little obnoxious from time to time. So I'm sure I'm the youngest of seven boys. So you can imagine
what
six older brothers was like. Sure. So, yeah.
Wow.
I want to put a question in here to counterbalance the diet, the Coke Zero thing, because I don't want people to think you're completely unhealthy, because I know you do a lot of outdoor activities and that sort of stuff. So recently you did a bike race, right? Some sort of fundraising thing?
Yeah. Yep. So that, again, I've been doing that since probably about same time, about 2017-ish. So one of my friends, Sam, got diagnosed with ALS quite a few years back. And we were always trying to find ways to do some fundraiser stuff. And my former CEO had encouraged me to do a charity bike race with him, supporting the American Lung Foundation. I did that. I thought, well, I did a 55 miler with him. And I was like, well, that's not as hard as I thought it was. And so then when the ALS Foundation here in Oregon, Southwest Washington, started doing a ride to defeat ALS, I started doing that. And I've done it, I think, every year since. But yeah, it's you get different levels. So this year I did the 62 and a half miles, 100K, and I did it like 2 days before we were together in Indianapolis. So my legs still hurt when I showed up in Indianapolis, and going upstairs was still pretty hard. But it was definitely worth it.
So like, how many, for those who maybe don't bike, like how many hours does that take? 3-4 hours to bike that, or
yeah,
less?
So. Well, you know, with stops and there's a couple of like little like refueling stations where you can grab some water and some, you know, peanut butter and jelly. But with all the stops, it was just under 5 hours for me.
Wow.
Okay. And so I stayed in the pack or in the Peloton throughout that whole thing, which this is the first time I've really kept up with the whole group really well. I used to finish in the bottom third, but I finished actually in the top half this time. So
nice.
Wow. Were you doing some training or something, or what got you to?
I think I did quite a bit more miles the first half of the year than I've done in the past. Yeah. I usually do quite a few hundred miles of prep rides over the course. You know, certainly not in one stint. I think the thing that I was probably it was surprising a little bit this time is that I had just come back from Leipzig, Germany. And so I hadn't ridden my bike in almost 2.5 weeks when I got on the bike to ride it. And I was a little concerned that I wouldn't be up for it, but I had done quite a bit of prep in the first half of the year. So it all worked out.
Well, and our new CEO is quite the cyclist, is my understanding. Have you had a chance to talk.
What I have heard. Yeah. So I talked with him a little bit. So I got the chance to meet him while I was in Leipzig, and then again while we were in Indianapolis, and I spent some time with him. So I chatted just a little bit about it. But he has done a lot of spinning and a lot of his own. He did Peloton for a while, but it sounded like when you guys talked to him on stage that he had let that lapse. So it's possible maybe he's gonna bring that back up. So
yeah. Well, I was gonna say Abby and I do a lot of the virtual riding, but what's it like to be in such a big pack? Like, do you really get to feel the, you know, you get dragged along kind of with the wind? Like, how does that feel being in such a big group in person?
Yeah, it was great. And to be fair, you do feel for two things. Like, I'm competitive, and you know, anybody who knows me knows that I'd like to achieve things, right? I like to win. And so the competitive side comes out in me more. When you're in a bigger group, you're like, okay, there's like a bunch of us right here. I can't be slower than all of these people, right? So so that competitive side comes out and you start to push yourself a little bit more. But yeah, you do feel the pull, right? Especially in the flats where we had some wind coming across. When you're in that group, you don't feel that wind, which when you're by yourself, man, the wind can really impact you. So it's it's a big difference.
Very cool. Then the only other question that I have that wasn't on the list, but something that we've spoken about, Jared, you live in or grew up where they filmed Goonies or something like that?
Yes. So I actually, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, but right at the mouth of the Columbia River. So I actually grew up in the town of Warrenton, but Astoria was like 7.5 miles from where I grew up. And Astoria is where they filmed most of Goonies. Now Goonies, oddly, as a kid, I saw the movie, I loved the movie, by the way. It's one of my favorites. But they are quite amazing because on their bikes, they go from, you know, a point 9 miles away from each other in like 5 seconds, which is pretty amazing. But so they basically, they filmed a lot of it in Astoria. That's where the Goonies house is. That's where you see the bridge and, you know, some of the hills scenes and things like that. But then the beach scenes are actually out by where I grew up in Warrenton, between Warrenton and Seaside. And then, you know, when they have that, the monster truck race on the beach, my brother and his friend were in one of those trucks. And some of the kids I grew up with were extras there. And then, wow. You know, when they're at the rocks and the ship comes out, that's like south towards Cannon Beach. So they were both north and south of where I grew up, as well as at the beach, which is like a mile from my house. So yeah, the movie was filmed all over my county.
That reminds me of a follow-up question I'll maybe finish with is, so like, you've traveled a lot in the US and internationally, but you also love the Pacific Northwest. So maybe just to give anyone listening or us like a spot to go see somewhere. Ooh. Pacific Northwest that you think like, oh, this is, you know, you could go anywhere in the world, but here's a cool spot that's still in the US, kind of close to home.
Okay. Man, you're going to put me on the spot with this one. I know. You guys know I love outdoors. So I'm a big outdoor guy. And one of the cool things in the Pacific Northwest is like, literally you've got mountains, you've got ocean, you've got dunes, you've got mountain bike trails, hiking, rafting, all the stuff that I love. Look, you know, where I grew up, I'm super partial to, I know I'm 100% biased, so take this with a grain of salt, but I've given some people some recommendations and they've always come away inspired. So right where I grew up, so Warrenton, Astoria, Seaside kind of area, Cannon Beach, that is an amazingly beautiful part of the country. The Columbia River is almost 5 miles. It is 5 miles wide right at the mouth where it opens up to the ocean. So it's a massive, you know, water vista. You can go to the South Jetty where you can see where the ocean, you know, where the river goes into the ocean, great waves. But Cannon Beach has some big rocks. So if you see those Haystack Rock and some of the big rocks on the Oregon coast, it's right there in the Pacific Northwest. So you could stay Cannon Beach, Seaside, Astoria. You can kind of see all of that and then go across to Long Beach, Washington, just across the river. It's one of the longest beaches in the world. And it's gorgeous. So everybody should go visit at least once.
I'm taking notes. I'm going to tell my wife, like,
I wanna go next ASAP. Time
we're planning a trip. Yeah.
And just let me know, cause I've got all the ins and outs there. Right. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I feel like that's, I mean, just speaks to, there's so many amazing underrated spots that like, you just, for if sure. you know someone who can tell you about it, it's just like really awesome. So great.
Yeah.
And it's always funny, like we always take for granted everything around us, but when other people come visit, then you realize, oh no, it is actually pretty special, right? So,
yeah, cool. Well, is there anything, Jared, that you want our listeners to know or hear from you about?
You know, I don't know. I love what we get to do. I think, you know, one of the other things about the Software One culture that's super supportive of us, you know, taking care of ourselves and making sure outside of work that we get to do those things that are fulfilling. But, you know, I just a plug for our Harmony Day and, you know, I got to do the ALS ride this year, but also so much support internally from the company for those types of things when we do them. And then, you know, again, the opportunity to just really work with our customers and do fun stuff. I don't know. I love it here and I love working with everybody that we get to work with.
That's been another episode of The Swell Files. Music, editing, and mixing by Brandon Avenger.
And we love to hear from you, so send us your feedback and future guest recommendations. We're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, so be sure to subscribe to never miss an episode.